Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad in Japan podcast. Probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host, Chris Broad, and we're joined as always by England's top Japan enthusiast, Mr. Pete Dawson. Pete, how are you doing on this fine day?
I'm good. I'm ensconced in a little Airbnb in Whitstable. I've taken the Abroad in Japan London compliment short on the road a little bit. So, just here for a couple of days, then going back. We're trying to sort of rinse the very last seconds out of the of being able to get somewhere before the full lockdown. Probably a little bit irresponsible, but you know, drove here, drove back. Who are we going to see?
Well, and you're going to spend the next month indoors. I feel sorry for all of our British listeners again having to go into lockdown. What a terrible, nightmarish situation. I do feel a sense of guilt being in Japan. A lot of my friends in the UK are like, "What's things like over in Japan?" It's like, well, yeah. Normal. I don't know how. Yeah. I don't know why. Maybe it's the wide adoption of masks. Maybe it's the low contact culture where people don't touch much. I don't know. But the cases here continue to be very, very low, amongst the lowest in the world. Mm. So, no, I do feel bad. I mean, how are you feeling about, you know, going under lockdown for a whole another month?
I mean, to be honest, I think it's not going to change my routine massively, but I would say that it's rather, I think it's more annoying for a lot of people in the way that the track and trace has been absolutely botched, farmed out to conservative cronies, turned in a terrible product, and people will lose their lives and get very ill because they're just not technocrats. They just have no grounding in any level of expertise. They don't trust scientists. They don't trust people who know what they're talking about. And they just think, they just think their mate down the road, who's got a limited company could probably turn something around really quickly because he's a good old chap. But what happens is, they don't turn around anything because they're not good old chaps and they do everything very cheap. And we've got a situation where everyone's very unwell and, it's looking pretty grim for the hospital. So any frontline NHS workers, I feel very, very sorry for. I just hope that there's a vaccine on the horizon because, our government certainly isn't. I would look to other people's governments to sort that out because we haven't got anybody fit for purpose, one might say. So I think there's a lot of people who are very, very angry. Not that I'm pro the current government at the best of times.
No, it's not a very good government at all, is it? Not at all. And it's an extra special, sad week. Not only is there a lockdown, but Sean Connery passed away, didn't he? And one of my favorite James Bond films was, you know, You Only Live Twice. I remember watching that a lot when I was a kid. I don't know why. I don't know why I was always drawn to that one. I remember hypothesizing that maybe it was the reason I moved to Japan at one point. I don't think it is. I went back and watched it. Not a great film. It's quite fun, but it's not a good film. But other than that, Sean Connery, legend, absolute legend. I'm going to go and binge watch a lot of his films, some of the better Bond films, like From Russia with Love, and of course, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. But yeah, what a strange week. I'm still editing my way through the Journey Across Japan videos. I did go to a public bath the other day to try and relax and unwind because it's quite difficult editing. It does take its toll sitting indoors for like 4 or 5 days in a row, hunched over a computer editing about stuff. And so I thought I'd go to a public bath and relax, you know, soak in the in the nice hot spring waters.
Hope you didn't bring your laptop.
No, can't take your laptop. But I got in and it was like getting into molten lava. And I got in for like 30 seconds. I nearly passed out. I never had that before. I don't know what was wrong with this bath. They just let someone turn the temperature up to, it must have been like 48 degrees Celsius or something. I like put my, I pull myself out after 30 seconds and like my lower half just bright red, like a bloody strawberry. And I had to sort of sit there at the side of the pool wondering why was it so damn hot? So damn annoying, isn't it? I want to enjoy
why
my
can't
bath.
Chris have kids? It's because he boiled his nethers.
It was bad. It was a rare, I mean, you know, Japanese hot springs, they can be pretty damn hot, but that was like next level. It wasn't fun. It wasn't relaxing. Not going to that public bath again. But we do have a nice story from Beth Lawson. Story of the week. It kicks off. Hi, Chris and Pete. I was lucky enough to move to Japan in March, just before the travel restrictions. After spending a month or so alone in my apartment, my school opened and I started working as an assistant language teacher. I've been working at a rural junior high school in North Saitama. My first day was awkward. After I gave my self-introduction to one class, the Japanese English teacher asked me if I had a boyfriend in front of all the students. I gave the standard rehearsed reply that all ALTs are trained to provide in such uncomfortable situations. I pressed a finger to my lips, winked, and said, "It's a secret." And just building on Beth's experience here, this will happen. If you teach in Japan, this will happen about 100 times a day, and it's very, very annoying. One boy asked the teacher, "Number?" Which means to chat up, and he encouraged the teacher to try and hit on me. "Beth sensei, would you join me for dinner?" the teacher asked. I laughed uncomfortably. "Ha ha, no, of course not. You're married." "He is." It was weird. Later that day, a 14-year-old boy stopped me in the corridor and asked me to join him to a love hotel. Bloody hell. I would have been angry, but he asked with perfect English grammar and pronunciation that was fantastic. He had obviously practiced. I laughed and walked away. I've been working at the school for 6 months now. The boys still make inappropriate comments, but I think sexual harassment is still an uncomfortable subject for most Japanese schools. The teachers prefer to ignore it rather than address it. My question to you, Chris, when you taught English in Japan, did any of your students have a crush on you? If so, how did you handle it? All the best, Beth Lawson. I don't, how did that get into story of the week? That's not a story. That's a question about sexual harassment. And Jesus. I said it was a happy story.
No, it probably wasn't a happy story, I guess. It's just, what a horrible situation to be in constantly and just constantly having to, you know, be treated like a bloody sexual commodity by your colleagues and the people that you teach. That's a horrible situation, isn't it?
I mean, it's standard. Like when I was teaching, whenever you do your self-introduction, right, it's called a jikō shōkai, self-introduction. You go in, you talk about how brilliant the UK is because it's got fish and chips and Harry Potter. You talk about why you came to Japan for half an hour. And then that everyone, you know, you sort of say, okay, question time, go and ask me some questions. And the only question that ever comes up is, do you have a girlfriend or do you have a boyfriend if you're a girl? And it's always, everyone laughs, it's really funny, and you have to sort of go, oh, no, it's a secret. Or some cases you go, oh, yeah, many girlfriends, and everyone claps. Now, as a guy, it's not just kind of funny, it's like a bit of lighthearted banter. But I imagine as a girl, that's a bit annoying, especially when the teacher tries to ask you out to dinner when they're married. Never thought about that as an angle. Bit weird. But my one thing the students do in the corridor, they'll say things like, oh, ikemen, which means like handsome man. I got that a lot. It felt quite a hollow sentence. I never really thought that, actually thought it, but I got that a lot. And it's sometimes it's funny, sometimes it's awkward. People just sort of saying, oh, he's handsome, he's hot, as you walk down the corridor. But that's quite common. I think it's quite common. I don't think it's because I'm hot. I think it's because I was special, because I was like, the only foreigner in town. I don't know. What do you reckon, Pete? Would you enjoy that?
What? Do you want me to ask you if you want to know whether I think you're hot or not?
Validate me, Pete. Validate me.
My sexuality.
How would you feel if, you know, you're walking down a corridor at school, going to a class, and some girls went, oh, ikemen, oh, he's hot. How do you feel about that?
Chris, I mean, I mean, we've probably spoken at length at the difference between boys and girls are sexually judged constantly throughout their working days from the age of like fucking 14. But I think very much when you look as shit as I do, I think it's, you know, I'll take anything. I will take oh, anyone's icky mare. Thank you very much.
I will take anyone's icky men. That is my favourite phrase. 2.5 years of doing this podcast. That's my favourite sentence.
I'm an icky man. Give me your icky men.
I don't know. I mean, your Colonel Sanders face, your moustache, I think that would win hearts and minds in the corridors.
I think 2020 has not been a vintage year for my looks, I have to say, where I've just sort of grown my hair out, grown my beard out. I look like the Colonel Sanders they dredged out of the Dottenbury River, as discussed.
Icky MP. Now, a couple of weeks ago, we were asked, I think it was last week or the week before, we were asked about Unsolved Mysteries, this episode that's been going around on Netflix, a season where they go and examine a mystery that's unsolved, and that's it, really. It's not much cathartic release at the end because the mysteries are unsolved. But one of the episodes in season two involved the tsunami and people who had seen ghosts. And there was a lot of comments from you guys about it, some good, some bad. So Pete and I finally watched it this week. What did you think, Pete? What did you make of this Unsolved Mysteries episode? I think, what was it called? It was called, like, Ghost of the Tsunami, right?
I think so, yeah. Which is a cool name, have to be said. Like, you know, Ghost of Tsushima kind of level quality. But that whole show irks me terribly because it's frequently nonsensical. Their unsolved mysteries are always... you know, they just haven't found the person, or they know what happened. They're just speculating because they don't have the person in custody and they don't have 100% of the information that they think that they need. So all, like, the first season was like that. I didn't watch the one about UFOs, but this is very much the UFO episode of this season. I think there's 6 episodes. I've seen all of them, of the second season, and the one set in Japan is, you know, it's just ghost stories and the a tale of a community coming to terms with something they should never have had to come to terms with because it was just horrendous, you know, just this kind of like obscene kind of like town psyche that's just forever indelibly marked thanks to an act of God. It's really is horrendous, and all of the other episodes are pretty much the same, where they're just speculating about what may have happened to a person when it's quite clear what's happened to the person. The only one that is a true unsolved mystery is the abduction of the two children in the New York park, which, again, harrowing. And it got to the point where I was watching that one and I was like, this is a bit much, to be honest. This is a bit too real. I quite like the stupid speculation about where, you know, the bloke might have, you know, where the bloke's flip flops may have gone when he jumped off the roof of the hotel and stuff. But yeah, this one there was a lot of silly nonsense in there. There was a very very charismatic monk that I very much enjoyed my time with. he was very, very good, and he was like basically saying, why would gods judge me for talking to a woman about her, you know, experiences about, you know, ghosts appearing to her and stuff? Why would they judge me? I think they just sort of go, well done, you've done something nice there because you made a woman feel better. It was a really nice little kind of, he's a really nice little character. I'd very much like to meet that monk.
Well, he was like the main character in the episode, wasn't he? So for me, it was quite a frustrating episode. The opening third was like, did a very good job. I think it did the best job of any documentary I've ever seen in showing and capturing the horror of the tsunami and the disaster. Like, it built up really well. It showed how bad it was. It interviewed people who had lost their families. They had a guy who had sadly lost his daughter and his wife. Even better, they didn't bloody focus on Fukushima, because the tsunami really was overlooked in the days and months and years after the disaster. Everyone just went, oh, Fukushima disaster, nuclear, even though, you know, the number of people that died there.
Because they just went, because the West basically went, oh, this is going to affect us somehow. In the same way that the repeated denials of the government in the East, you know, caused. I think it was the nuclear detonation. It was either that disaster in Chernobyl, or it was the nuclear detonations in the 40s, where you can kind of carbon date. And I think it might have been in that in one of the Unsolved Mysteries.
It was, yeah.
They found that a bone was older than they thought it was, simply because they managed to sort of carbon date this person, because she had a certain isotope in her body that was released, I think, either when Chernobyl happened or when Bikini Atoll happened. Fascinating kind of technique. Mm. But yeah, I think we looked at Fukushima through the lens of how is this going to affect us. We don't really care about the people who actually was dealing with it, but the tsunami obviously killed a lot more people and was a lot more dangerous, a lot more destructive.
Well, yeah, I mean, around 16,000 people died in the tsunami. Fukushima, it's in the double digits probably. There's a great deal of speculation around it. And of course, 2,533 people still missing from the tsunami as well.
Yeah.
But I learned some new things as well. Like, I didn't know that in the days after the disaster, the bodies had to be like temporarily buried because there was no power for crematoriums. So they couldn't burn them. So there were people just buried and then had to be dug up later amongst all the trauma of everything else going on. But it did focus. So the first third, I thought, was fantastic. It really did paint a brutal picture of what the situation was in a way that I felt I would like to have seen more of it, to be honest. I thought that was fantastic. Yeah. But of course, there needed to be some unsolved mysteries. And the mystery was people driving taxis had a person in the back who just disappeared. And the priest you mentioned, he was very, really amazing guy. The bulk of like the final act, like a whole third of it, was dedicated to a woman who was possessed, who I suspect just had some really bad mental health problems. And I felt, you know, it was kind of interesting, but I felt, why not focus more on the victims? I don't know. It just it felt a bit too much. I mean, I'm not someone who believes in ghosts and the supernatural. And to make the third act of that episode work, you kind of need to. Otherwise, you just think, oh, it's someone who's got like really bad mental health issues, rather than a woman who is possessed and claiming she was living, people who had died were living in her and all this sort of stuff. I don't know. What did you think of it all?
Well, I think I watched the final episode of the series. I was certainly the final one that I was going to watch of the God. What was he? He was in the Bush in the George Bush organization.
Oh, the guy that was found
found a rubbish tip, and he had bipolar. He clearly wasn't taking his meds. He clearly wasn't very well. And he climbed in my opinion, he climbed in a bin, he was found on a landfill, and these things happen. It was explained in the TV show, these things happen. People are climbing there for warmth during the winter months. He was clearly distressed. He had no shoes on and, you know, all this stuff. So I think a lot of this, series is just people with ill health, meeting their demise and us trying to find reason where reason can't really be found because they're mentally unwell and mentally disturbed.
So
a lot of what this TV show and what this episode sort of told us was that when 16,000 people die in a tsunami, that will indelibly affect an entire community and exacerbate mental health problems. I'm not sure I could get over that, to be quite frank. I don't think I'd be in any kind of fit state if I saw my children, my family, my wife, my partner die in such a circumstance. It's just unconscionable what the people went through. And obviously casts a very long shadow. But great to see a part of Japan that you don't see. And you're right, they didn't mention Fukushima at all. If at all, I don't think they did at any point during 45 minutes.
I sat through it with a pen and paper waiting for it to come up to make a note. And it didn't, to my delight. I think it was strange because I recognised the exact locations. It was all shot in Ishinomaki, where I spend a lot of time. It's only, you know, an hour from here. You've been there. We went there together. I saw locations that you and I passed through on our journey there. I don't know. I'm glad they did focus on it. And I think overall it would have been a good documentary, but it was misplaced in Unsolved Mysteries. That wasn't the place for it to go. And I felt that the reenacting of the ghost stories was a bit odd. Like there was a woman who thought, like, some people approached her car and the woman's just like, I knew they were dead people. And they were asking for directions. And I told them, you're dead. You're dead. What if there were just genuinely people that were lost? I just thought it was a bit bizarre. that one. But there was some really bizarre reenactments that I don't know. It's a strange one, but I think it had been done tastefully overall, the episode. And clearly the filmmakers in question had done a good job, and they'd done the research, and they meant well. So I do recommend watching it, guys, if you have Netflix. If you don't have Netflix, you can't watch it. But if you do have Netflix, go and check it out. Unsolved Mysteries, Ghosts of the Tsunami. It'll paint a bleak and unpleasant picture of the tsunami in a way that has yet to be seen, I think, on TV, on the big screen. Would you recommend watching it, Pete? Does it get the thumbs up?
Yeah. Oh, it's only telly I've watched in the past 3 months, so it's got to be all right, even how stupid it is.
A scathing remark, but nevertheless, yeah. A thumbs up from Ikemen Donny. And we now turn our attention, that's the only nickname, to a...
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking hour?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? Mine's pretty low after coming back from the craziness of WrestleMania, too many body slams and all that. And I'm pretty jealous of my co-host Chris, who seems to have been exploring Japan's most isolated hotel. He's definitely winning in the relaxation race, but I'm determined to catch up with him. It can be easy to get swept up in social gatherings and spread ourselves too thin, but with therapy, you can learn to prioritize your time and recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Japan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Japan.
The fax machine. What do we got this week in the fax machine, Mr. Dawson?
Yeah, well, the first one kind of concerns the TV show from Michael in Swindon in the UK. Says, my question to you is regarding an Unsolved Mysteries series. Have any of you ever experienced anything paranormal? Have you had any ghostly or spiritual encounters? Chris, thanks for your hard work on the YT channel and the podcasts. Michael in Swindon in the UK, have you ever kind of experienced any ghosty ghoulies, bumps in the night sort of business, Chris?
Well, I'm quite scared. I'm quite scared of things. Like, I did that Love Hotel episode, right, last week.
Yeah.
And that was scary. You what? Did you enjoy it?
I said, well worth a watch. I said, it's very good. I watched it this morning. I've had a busy couple of days, so I've not had a chance to sit down and watch it, but it was very good. I very much enjoyed, was it, Natsuki at one point went, "Cho, fuck."
He did say that.
Which I think is like a Tokyo way of sort of going, "This is very fuck."
he said all sorts of terrible things, many of which I had to remove from the video for monetization reasons. But I mean, that was pretty scary. Now, I'm not a spiritual person, or I don't believe in the paranormal, but I still get a bit edgy, and I was on edge in that Love Hotel, like looking up into the ceiling. There were like empty vents and things where you could see poking out, and yeah, it was like really uncomfortable. And there was evidence that people had been in there. There was the drawings of a woman that had been cut open, and
oh yes, God,
it was
Lord.
Pretty messed up. And that was
the thing. The thing that gets me is like that because Japan's it gets very hot in summer, but it's also very very humid. So it really does a number on everything. If a building is left to basically just go to seed, not to go to seed, but like just kind of just left to rack and ruin, it really looks like shit in about 3 weeks time, it seems, because it's just so moist and things crumble and rot really quickly because of the humid atmosphere. And if it touches the elements, you're just absolute in bits. I very much enjoyed the quarry that you guys found. It did look like a video game. It looked like the lower levels of video game Control, if you've played that, which is very good, which you can play on the Switch now. They've got this kind of like streaming service on Nintendo Hub, and you can play that now, which is a bit of a weird one, really, because it's a really graphically intensive title, but well worth a play.
Well, I should tie it in with the quarry, do some quarry action, get the commercial film there.
Yeah, they're right.
But no, I'm not spiritual. But I think another thing going back to the episode was interesting. They did talk about how Japanese people view death. They kind of see it as a thin veil, like a shoji sliding door, right? That is very thin. You're either one side of it or the other, but when you pass through it, you can still see on the other side because it is so thin. That was kind of interesting.
It's very nice. What do you think, Pete? It's a lovely thought.
Are you a paranormal individual?
No, I'm afraid not. I did, you know, watching that little episode, I was like going, that's quite a nice way of looking at death, I suppose. I watched the film Coco as well quite recently. I said, that's quite a nice way to think about death. But no, I'm not really, I don't think I've ever had visitations. I mean, I've been spooked out lots, yeah. but that's just being, but I've always liked abandoned buildings and stuff. That's why I really enjoyed when we went to that one, that wedding venue in Ishinomaki. Yeah, I love anything that's abandoned, anything that's been left, anything that, where I think that people just haven't been in years. It's just incredibly exciting to me. So exciting. But yeah.
You were certainly desperate for treasure that day. Rummaging through the attic and the ceiling,
VHS tapes.
The ceiling vents.
I've
for
got
treasure.
VHS tapes.
But I did. I mean, I used to work at a castle that was allegedly haunted. Lots of terrible things had transpired there. It was like 600 years old, and a lot of my colleagues said they saw things. And I was always a bit uncomfortable. The castle was in two parts, and like the one part of it, one half of it, was in a moat, in a lake rather. It had a moat around it. And
right.
Like everyone would leave that bit to go to the section that was kind of on the mainland. And I'd have to go down there and sort of clear up plates and things and cutlery. And I'd be in this massive castle alone with silence. And that was really unpleasant. My colleagues would hear children laughing. They'd hear dogs like going under the tables.
No.
Probably some desperate drunkard from the wedding who was still rolling around on the floor. But, you know, they saw things. I often felt that it could be explained, you know, even in the Love Hotel episode, we took it out, but there was a door that was banging And we were a little bit spooked by that, this banging noise. But it was clearly just the wind, like a change in air pressure or something. Yeah. And I remember getting into an argument with some colleagues at the castle once. They were like, did you hear that? That noise there, can you hear that? I'm like, yes, it's the wind hitting the bloody window. And more often than not, that was the explanation. So I am a cynic when it comes
love
to it. But I'd be interested to find out if there's more credibility in these things. But there never is, really, is there?
Yeah, definitely.
It's just paranormal. I don't know.
It's just nonsense.
Got one here from Dan. It says, good morning, evening, Big Cheese Chris and Top Dog Pete.
Dogs love Chris.
Like menu. Just got to say, I love the podcast and the videos, especially the most recent one of your spooky travels. Now you've finished another journey. Is there going to be, or are there going to be more quests through the land of Japan? Since you went from bike seat to car seat, for example, traveling along the coastline of the Sea of Japan or down to Tottori sand dunes and riding a camel. Thank you for everything that you both do. I enjoy the truly sarcastic videos and adventure episodes since the cancellation of my trip to Japan and because 2020 has gone down the tubes. Best wishes to both of you. Stay safe. Dan. Dan, who wants me to ride on a camel. I've no intention of riding a camel anytime soon, Dan. I've yet to ride a horse. The idea of riding an animal like that scares me. You've ridden a horse, haven't you?
I've ridden a horse around Hyde Park, yeah. Very enjoyable. You were invited to ride a horse down in Kyushu, I think, a little while ago, and you just said, I'm too busy to ride a horse. Unbelievable.
It was a beach in Okinawa, and it was going to be glorious, but yeah, I said no. Couldn't be bothered.
Too busy.
I've no intentions of doing any other journeys for now. I think I kind of like the whole road trip format, to be honest, Dan, because it's a lot easier than riding a bike or a horse or a camel or going in a canoe around the Sea of Japan, and a lot safer as well. I think I'll just stick to the driving format for now. Though I did kind of miss the bicycle on season two of Journey Across Japan. I did quite like cycling, but you know, you can't pack as much in when you're cycling all day. And at the end of the day, if you want to put entertainment front and center, it needs to be not a bike, in my opinion. What do you reckon, Pete? What form of transport should I use next? The next season?
I think you should use Tokyo Creative's Ian all the time for all of your projects. Because I've got a lot of time for Ian, the basketball star, who on Instagram recently was playing basketball in Yoyogi Park, and I was like, oh, I don't even like basketball, and that looks incredibly alluring. But yeah, I'm good to see he's back on the Chris Broad hustle, working with you on another project.
It wouldn't have been Journey Across Japan without Ian. He is the secret source that makes Journey Across Japan work. When you said, when you mentioned Ian, I thought you meant like ride in around like a horse. Like,
yes. Yeah, well, that'll do as well. That'll do. Get a little saddle for Ian and just him on all fours, tooting around.
Poor old Ian.
Got
one from Lydia. I'll hand that over to you. Coffee time.
All right, then. Lydia says, she's from Florida. Hello, Chris and Pete. My husband and I have been making plans to visit Japan. We love to travel, and hopefully in 2 years we'll be making our way there. I have a slight addiction to spicy foods, so I tend to have hot sauces around at work and home. You know, for a snack here and there, or to jazz up some pizza. I agree. That's great work, Lydia. I do the same with little packets of Tabasco. I know that's a very weak hot sauce, but still. Up until now, I've had access to hot sauce or spicy food anywhere we travel, Mexico and Peru, and I was wondering how widespread spicy food is in Japan. I've not run into any info about this in my research. Would you recommend that I bring my favourite condiment on our trip? Are there other countries that you guys have been to for which I need to prepare to bring my hot sauce? England was a very good example. Thank you, guys. Have a good day. Linda from Florida. I work at a non-profit here in Florida, and I use the fax machine every day. It breaks down a lot. Who fixes a fax machine, Lydia?
Good God. Poor old Lydia. I mean, we don't even have a fax machine. Spoilers.
No.
But, I mean...
Unbelievable.
If we did get one, it would just make this podcast very miserable. The whole podcast would just be the noise of... beep, 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 beep. Actually, when I did a video a few weeks ago when we went to this the $20,000 a month apartment, Alex, the guy that runs his real estate agent, really nice guy, he's got a fax machine, and we filmed a section of him using it, and it just wouldn't work. Like, he punched the number in, and it did the old dial-up noise, like the 90s, and then nothing happened, and it was very anticlimactic, and it reminded me why fax machines are outdated and why I hate them. Condiments, though.
He's got a nice dog, though, hasn't he? He's got a nice dog.
He's got a lovely pug, Scotty the pug. Apparently, I was speaking to Alex the other day. He's become quite famous since that video because it got like a million views in a week. And where he lives, or where his real estate company is in Nakameguro, it's a very centralised area. People have just been walking into his shop, opening the door, and went, "Hey, I like your video, mate," and then just walking off.
And,
apparently, he was walking down the river in Nakameguro River the other day, and somebody just shouted, "All right, YouTube," and then just walked off. And he was like shell shocked by all this. Just like, what's going on? It's hilarious. I live vicariously through his experiences of YouTube fame. Hot sauce. I have no knowledge of hot sauce. I would recommend you bring your favourite hot sauce because there isn't a whole lot in Japan. We did, of course, give Natsuki some Hot Ones The Last Dab Triple X sauce in Sapporo. You missed it, unfortunately, didn't you, Pete? Because you missed your plane or something. You had to run off.
You'd only fed me some hot takoyaki, so you'd only abused my mouth to me, if you excuse my turn of phrase.
You might have had your mouth abused, but not on the scale that Natsuki was. I mean, he got properly stuffed. The last dab. He was crying. But that video, that video's got like a million views on the second channel because people love watching Japanese people try hot sauce. But no, bring your own, Lydia, and then give it to Japanese people, film it, and get millions of views on YouTube. That's my advice.
Awesome.
Got one here from Dan. It says, "Hi, Chris and Pete. One question alone. Pete, why do you have a goatee? Thank you, Dan."
Ahead, Pete. I mean, it's basically because I can't grow anything else. Like, if I just grow my beard out, if I go from year zero to beard, it doesn't grow on the sides. It's a really weird phenomenon. It's just moustache, little goatee beard, and nothing else. And it's very upsetting. If I could get out of the goatee boulevard, I would certainly try my best. But I just couldn't. I can't. That's all it grows. That's all my face deems fit for human consumption.
Ickim MP down the goatee boulevard. What a lovely image that is.
Awful. Awful, eh?
God. Keep the stories, questions, comments coming in to abroadjapanpodcast@gmail.com. Guys, we'll be back to do it all over again in the next few days. But for now, no matter where you might be out there in the big wide world, stay safe. And if you're in the UK, good luck with this quarantine. And good luck to you, Pete, as well. And
I'll stay safe. Yeah. With my beard.
Stay safe. But for now, guys, we'll see you in the next few days. Have a good one.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.